Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
We're all just relying on what we can to get by. And if that means debt or credit cards, don't internalize that shame. If you've gotten, you know, laid off, don't internalize that shame like so many people have. If your income has taken a hit, like, welcome to the club. Literally almost everybody I know has, you know, taken a hit in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's important that we try not to internalize this as a personal failure and just realize that, you know, the system is broken and there are a lot of things out of our control, and let's do the best that we can with the resources that we have.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Compton Game, where we flip the script on the old school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
Whatever you're saving up for, a CD from Sandy Spring Bank lets you grow your savings at a guaranteed rate. Right now, earn interest at 4.5% APY on an 8-month CD special or 4.25% APY on a 14-month CD special. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com/CD specials. Minimum opening deposit to earn the annual percentage yield is $500 for the 8-month CD special and $2,500 for the 14-month CD special. Member FDIC.
If you don't know Melanie yet, I'm really happy to introduce her to you. She's as real as they come and created a career from her whole mental health struggles dealing with debt, which I think is a pretty awesome outcome to having debt. Melanie's story, it's just like yours and mine. It's really easy to get into debt, like really, really easy. And it takes some grit and hard work to get out of debt, but it is definitely more than doable. I have been wanting to do this episode for a really long time because I feel like we need to talk more about mental health and wealth. There's a real connection there. It's the whole basis behind my creating the Money Mindset Journal that I have, and all of my podcast episodes around money mindset, because this is definitely something I have struggled with myself. I have struggled with my money mindset for years, still do, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. So I think stories like Melanie's really need to be heard and shared, because she was in the midst of debt, but found her way out. And I think if you're sitting in that place right now, I want you to know that you can find your way out. I said before we started recording, I'm a big admirer of yours, and I've been following you for quite a while now, and I don't know what took me so long to have you on the show, but I love the message you share around debt, around mental health, and I think these are conversations that we need to be having more often. So many people are suffering from depression and all sorts of mental health issues, particularly around money and particularly in the time we're in right now in 2020. So I think your message is just so important to share. I'm just curious, you know, why does debt lead to depression and other mental health issues? Like, what actually happens inside us that causes that sort of response to debt?
Yeah, something that I think, you know, I've realized over the years is that debt causes depression because you are continually paying for your past and you feel like you can't enjoy your present or plan for your future. So, you know, when you're paying off debt, you're paying for something that has already happened, that you're already charged, and you're having this monthly payment, which is usually a pretty good chunk of your paycheck. And so you're kind of, you know, using your money that you've earned today, that you've worked very hard for, and paying this thing from the past. And I feel like it can lead to this feeling of being stuck.
Right.
I know when I was paying off my debt, I felt incredibly stuck, like I couldn't move forward until the debt was paid off, that I was, you know, kind of beholden to this debt as long as I had it. And I had a lot of shame around the debt because I got it from NYU, which is a fancy private school. You know, I had an arts degree and I felt really guilty because I went, you know, there, and I felt shame because I couldn't find a job to pay it back. And I think there are so many different reasons that it can lead to depression. And, you know, if you have credit card debt, there's obviously a lot of shame around that, potentially other issues that you're dealing with. And, you know, it's just a stressful situation in general when you are, you know, paying off debt and dealing with interest. And, you know, it often feels like you're moving two steps forward, one step back, especially with the interest. And, you know, I think it can just be a perfect storm for this situational depression.
You made such a good point, and I haven't thought about it this way, but I think it probably is something that resonates with so many people, is a lot of people have student loan debt of varying degrees. And you're right, there is a sense of guilt if you graduate with that type of debt and then you're not able to get a job, which is the reality for so many people, but we don't talk about that. I mean, it's just, you're supposed to go to school, mm-hmm. you're supposed to take out however much in debt to, you know, to take out, and then you're just supposed to assume that on the other side somehow you get a big job with a big salary, and that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, the narrative is broken. You know, I feel like a lot of people in my generation, you know, we did what we were told, like go to a good school, work hard, and you're going to get a good job and pay it back. And, you know, that is not what happened. You know, I went to a good school, I worked hard, and I struggled after I graduated and, you know, was making $10 to $12 an hour those first 2 years after having a master's degree. And that was incredibly painful and something that brought me a lot of shame and depression and also anxiety. And, you know, I feel like, especially right now, given the recession and COVID and everything that's happening, like this narrative needs to change, because this is not like the main way that you're going to find success or financial stability. And like, I'm not saying right. that college isn't great or that college isn't for a lot of people, but I think it's not for everybody. And I also think, you know, college costs really need to go down. I really hope that that's yes. the bubble that bursts next, because I'm like, this is not sustainable. I can't imagine being a parent right now and trying to pay for college. And it's like, oh, I'll save up 200 grand for like, you know, 50 grand a year tuition. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it does. It blows my mind. And I teach at a university here in Los Angeles, and to be able to see sort of like the underbelly of how it actually operates
and, you know, how they function with money. I'm not going to, you know, say anything too damaging, but I'll just say that it's very fascinating when you look under the hood of how universities work and how they operate with their money. And it's like, okay, wow. And you have to keep charging students more and more tuition. And, you know, it just really blows my mind. I could probably go on for hours about that, but why do you think we don't talk more openly about the correlation between mental health and money more? Is it just because money is already like this taboo topic? And then if we add something on top of it, but why do you think we don't have more open conversations about this?
Yeah, I think money is still taboo. Mental health is still taboo, even though it's, you know, getting a little bit more of the limelight right now. And I think when you put the two together, it's really this, you know, perfect storm, this combination that is, you know, so riddled with shame and being taboo. And I feel like people really don't want to talk about the correlation between money and mental health because they see it as a personal failing. You know, they feel like if I'm in debt, it's my fault I failed. Whereas they're not looking at the fact that for the past 30 years, wages have not kept up with inflation, that higher education costs are like, you know, crazy. They're not looking at the big picture. And, you know, instead they just think, oh, it's all my fault. And I'm not downplaying personal responsibility. I think we should all, you know, do our best to be financially responsible and take responsibility for our choices and our actions and our money. But I also think it's super important to kind of zoom out and look at the big picture as well. And, you know, we were given a deck of cards that was, you know, not going to get us to win. And so, you know, I think there's this shame because we live in such an individualistic culture that it just feels like a huge personal failing if we are dealing with money and mental health issues. And, you know, something that I talk about a lot is that it can go either way. You know, your mental health issues can affect your finances. So, you know, when I'm depressed, I stop caring about money. I don't, you know, really look at my savings and I spend carelessly. And on the converse, you know, when I was in debt, I had tons of anxiety and depression because I felt so worthless by being in so much debt. And so it can go either way. And, you know, I feel like people just aren't equipped with the language to be able to talk about what these issues are, or they feel like it's just them. I get that so much that people feel like, oh, I thought I was the only one dealing with this. And that's been the beautiful part about talking about this more is that once you just open that door and start talking about it, then people come out of the woodwork and they're like, oh my gosh, I felt that way too. I felt that way too. I'm dealing with this right now. I'm so glad you talked about this. And, you know, just think about all of the topics that, you know, we just don't talk about that people are dealing with every day by themselves. And we should bring these topics to light because they're an issue for so many people.
I couldn't agree more. It's really been, I think, about 5 years that I've really struggled with my own mental health and had a lot of anxiety. And then I had a weird freak injury 2 years ago and became partially deaf. And that totally changed my mental health and anxiety levels. But I think about, you know, in my family, we didn't talk about anything about mental health. We didn't talk about therapy. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about any of those things. And I so wish those topics would have been normalized because I could think of so many times in my own life, even as a child, when I probably did have depression or anxiety and I just didn't have the vocabulary around it, nor the tools in the toolkit to be able to figure out how to, you know, back myself out of it. And I just feel like it's so many people are sitting in anxiety, especially now, anxiety, depression, whatever level that might be for you. And they are carrying that shame around that maybe this means they failed or they're failing their partner or their family or whatever it may be. And it saddens me that people are sitting in that place and just not knowing that there are tools out there to help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, you know, such a sad situation that we don't have the vocabulary or the openness to address these issues. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, you know, from childhood to adolescence to onward, you know, there are these issues that a lot of people are dealing with that they might not even recognize. Like I've, you know, spoken with people who are, you know, in their 30s and they're like, I'm just realizing now that a lot of my behavior is based in anxiety when I thought it was all of these other things, but I'm just, you know, realizing now that that's what it was. And I think the more we talk about it, the more that we'll be able to recognize it and break the taboo and, you know, be able to have those conversations with future generations. And, you know, I think we really need to separate this idea that it's a personal feeling or that there's something wrong with you. You know, if you had a broken arm or a broken foot, you would go to the doctor and get help and no one would think anything of it. And I think we need to have that same kind of thought process. If there's not something okay with your brain and your mental health, you need to go to a doctor or a counselor and get help. And there's no shame in that because, you know, something's obviously not working. Something's not in alignment. And that is not a personal failing. It just means that there's more work to do and, you know, help that you can get.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if you would, if you could share, what are some of the things that, that you have done or that you even currently do that help you with your mental health that has sort of helped you other than, of course, paying off your debt, which is probably a huge anxiety reliever. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the other things that you do practically that might be able to help people if they are in this situation?
Yes, definitely paying off debt super helped my mental health. It's like a huge, you know, burden and weight was lifted. But, you know, that's not to say that I haven't had mental health issues since. And obviously, given the current climate, you know, it's just ripe for depression and anxiety. And, you know, that's something that I think many of us are dealing with. And potentially, you know, a lot of people are dealing with situational depression and anxiety for the first time, maybe. You know, it's definitely a situation that kind of calls for that. And I think, you know, something that's been helping me through is really trying to be mindful of the moment. So, you know, there's mindfulness, and that's something that I've been trying to practice more. And really, all that is really trying to stay present in the moment. You know, so much of our life is spent ruminating about the past or worrying about the future that it's, you know, so rare that we actually just kind of enjoy this moment for what it is and what's really happening. And so I try to ground myself and say, I am safe. I am healthy. And given the current climate right now, just saying those two words, I am safe and I am healthy, that makes me feel rich. That makes me feel wealthy, you know, because so many people are suffering right now. And so to be able to just kind of ground myself with those phrases really helps. I have a thing that's called a what makes me feel good list. And so I, you know, wrote down all of these things that make me feel good, you know, petting my cat, drinking tea, taking a bath, watching trashy television, having living room dance parties. And I wrote it because, you know, when you're in this anxious, depressed state, like you're super heightened and your cognitive thinking and reasoning isn't so, you know, it's not working to its highest capacity. So it's not easy or normal to be like, okay, this is what I'm going to do to take care of myself. So having that list just on my fridge is like, okay, I don't feel well. What's one thing that I can do right now to feel better? And, you know, it's not a cure or, you know, something that's going to completely change everything, but it does help. And, you know, even if it just changes your mood a little bit, you know, that is just so wonderful. And another tip that I would love to share is really trying to re-engineer your mood through music. So yesterday, for example, I was in a foul mood. Like I was just in a foul mode. I was so angry. I was so upset. I was kind of depressed. I just was like not feeling it at all whatsoever. And then I just put on some Britney Spears. I put on some Ciara. And I was just like, yeah, like I'm feeling it now. Let's just dance. Let's just move. Let's listen to some bubblegum pop and some R&B. And I started feeling better. And I looked it up and there's, you know, scientific studies that prove that your mood can improve by listening to upbeat music. So I think, you know, you can definitely try to engineer your mood and listen to positive music that kind of gets you in a better mood in a different place.
I love that idea. I mean, we definitely use music whenever we're not feeling great or anxiety comes up. And I think what you're talking about is so great because these are like fairly simple things that you can do. I mean, making a list of the things that make you happy, that's an easy thing. And some of those things, it's like, okay, well, yeah, let me just take myself out of my anxiety or my depression for a moment or whatever it may be, and let me try one of these things. And sometimes it's like, wow, that was so easy to make me feel better. I didn't need a lot. I just needed to watch trashy TV, or I needed my tea, or whatever it may be, you know. And so I think that's always great to share with people, is like, it doesn't always take a lot of money to do something. Or, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't have money to go to a therapist. There's lots of other ways to do this, to kind of, like you say, like re-engineer what's going on in your mind and in your body. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me, and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there.
I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial.
We've all spent more time with family lately. It can feel like old times, but your mind is on the future too, and what you can do to shape it. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work with clients to help them grow and protect their money with wealth management, trust services, and insurance, so they can enjoy today and ultimately pass along their wealth. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your dreams. Visit sandyspringbank.com/wealth. Wealth and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed, and may lose value.
Yeah, totally. And you know, everything that's on my What Makes Me Feel Good list doesn't cost any money. It doesn't take that much time either. And you know, they're just simple tactics that I can do like literally right now to try to make myself feel better. And sometimes that just means going outside for a 20-minute walk. And something that I like to do is I like to go on a flower hunt. And what I say by that is like, I like to go look and, you know, hunt for all the flowers and see how many different types of flowers there are in my neighborhood. And that really helps me stay mindful. And I actually literally smell the roses when I see them. And, you know, that's kind of a beautiful thing too, is just to be like, wow, look at these beautiful roses and see how beautiful they smell. And that kind of helps me stay mindful and in the moment and also remember that there is beauty in this world. And I think, you know, something that I have really been focusing on in the past year or two is really focusing on how can I cultivate more moments of beauty, joy, and pleasure in my life? Because those things will help me be happier and improve my mood and make living more enjoyable. You know, life is hard in all aspects. And, you know, right now is an incredibly difficult moment for literally everybody. And so what I always try to ask myself is, what can I do right now to have more moments of beauty, joy, and pleasure? And, you know, I can't answer that for you, but I know how I can answer that for myself. And I have to actively try to go out and do those things so I can experience that.
That's so great, because it's about being very purposeful in the day. And I think that's just such a great way to keep you really grounded in the moment and to keep that mindfulness really, you know, in the forefront. I want to talk a little bit about the debt. I know you said you paid off about 81,000 of student loans. It took you somewhere around 9 years. Mm-hmm. What could you share about that process of actively paying off the debt? You know, how did you go about paying it off in that time frame? And you know, did some things work, some things not work? I'd love for you to just share a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, definitely. So I paid off $81,000 in student loan debt, actually probably more, because that's not including interest. I don't know exactly how much I paid in interest. Right. So, you know, I just say 81,000, but it was probably closer to six figures. And you know, most of that came from NYU. I got 58,000 in student loans from NYU, 23,000 from Cal State Long Beach. And, you know, I went to school at two different times. So I graduated in 2006 with my bachelor's and 2011 with my master's. And so, you know, there was some time in between that I was working. And so, you know, when I graduated from undergrad, I kind of just treated my debt like any other bill and didn't really think about it. And I paid the minimum for the first 5 years. So, you know, it's like I paid debt for 9 years total. You know, for the first 5 years, I was just paying the minimum. And then, you know, around year four, I went back to school and accrued a lot more debt, right? And it wasn't until after I graduated NYU where I was like, oh, I just like tripled my debt load. And now I see how much interest is accruing every day. And that's when I really got serious. So, you know, I paid off all of my debt in 9 years, but, you know, kind of like the sexier version of the story is that I paid off 68,000 of it in 4.5 years after graduating. And so, you know, I would say the first half of the journey, I was very nonchalant, kind of just paying the minimum, didn't really care about it, you know, had all of these kind of money mindset blocks of like, oh, everyone has student loan debt, or student loan is the good debt, you know. And then I really had to address those mindset, you know, beliefs and change them in order to pay off debt. And I was like, you know what, maybe student loans aren't the good debt. And if everyone has debt, maybe I want to be different. And, you know, I had to really face those in order to get in the mindset of like, okay, this is going to be a long journey. It's not going to be easy. And I'm going to do it. And so I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time, and my rent was $400. And that really helped. I was sharing a studio with my then partner. So that helped. And I didn't have a car. I didn't have health insurance. And I was side hustling all of the time. And so, you know, something that worked for me is really earning more. I know a lot of people focus on frugality, which I think is great. I think, you know, frugality is a really great first step for a lot of people. But for me, I was already a minimalist. I hardly had anything to my name. I'm not a big consumer at all. So, you know, I was able to cut back on a few things, but, you know, I quickly hit that threshold and was like, okay, I can't cut back anymore. So like, how am I going to pay off this debt when I've cut everything out and I'm still like hardly making any money? And so, you know, I came to the conclusion that the only way I'm actually going to pay off this debt is to earn more. And so I started side hustling like crazy. I was, you know, working as a brand ambassador, as a pet sitter, as an event organizer. I worked at an overnight rave selling water bottles once. You know, I would find all of these crazy gigs on Craigslist and TaskRabbit. And actually, funny story, I looked at Craigslist gigs like a couple weeks ago, and there was a gig for someone to take temperatures at a party. So, you know, there are tons of crazy gigs that are on Craigslist and TaskRabbit. And I was just so, you know, like, focused at the time. I was like, I will literally do anything to try to pay off this debt. And then, you know, I started my blog, Dear Debt, in 2013 because I was so depressed about my debt in the year before. And I was like, if I just, you know, use all of this energy that I'm so depressed about my debt and try to put it into something positive, like actually writing and trying to be accountable, like maybe I can actually pay off this debt. And, you know, the blog changed my life. It led to a book, and it led to a freelance writing career, which that significantly, you know, helped my income. And I was able to get out of kind of this low nonprofit pay trap. And, you know, self-employment actually really helped me pay off my debt. And so, you know, I think it's not necessarily a journey that a lot of people have, because a lot of people, when they quit their jobs, they're nervous to go to self-employment because it might be a pay cut. Whereas for me, I was like, when I finally found a nonprofit job 2 years after graduation, it was making $31,000 as an events and communications coordinator. And a year later, I had all of these side hustles with my writing and my blog, and I was making the same amount of money on the side. And so, you know, I came to this conclusion that if I quit my job, I think I'll be able to make more money. And I was able to double my income that first year to $60,000. And so, you know, when your rent's $400 and you're making $60,000, I was able to throw a lot more money towards my debt. And, you know, so I definitely say, you know, paying more than the minimum really helped. Earning a lot more money. You know, something that I can't ignore was having a low cost of living. And I will just say that I did not like Portland. I really wanted to move back to LA so badly because I hated the rain. I hated the weather. I just, it wasn't my scene, but I knew that it was way more affordable than LA. So I was like, I just need to stay here until the debt's paid off. And like my debt-free treat, my debt-free dream is going to be moving back to LA. And I moved back to LA like 6 months after I paid off my debt, and it was great. So, you know, that really helped, was having a low cost of living. And I made that, you know, conscious choice of like, okay, I don't like it here, but it's what's going to be best for my finances for now.
I love that you share that because, you know, a lot of times people don't want to make the short-term, take the short-term pain, basically, of staying somewhere or staying in a job or doing something they don't want to do in order to really throw a lot of money onto whatever kind of debt they have. But I mean, that was a really like a short-ish chapter in your life. And now you're living in a place that you really want to live and you're debt-free and you, you know, you're in a different place in your life. So that short term, I mean, in the long run, it's really just a small amount of time to make that sacrifice in order to now be on that other side of that.
Definitely. And I, you know, realize that I can either suffer now or I can suffer later. And, you know, as we get older, it's like, it's really hard to be like an older broke person. And I was like, I don't want to be that person. Like, it's already sucky to be a broke person in your 20s and 30s. And so, you know, something that kept me going was this thing that I called a debt-free dream list. And so it was all of the things that I wanted to do after paying off debt. And so that was move back to LA. That was get cats because I really wanted to have a pet, but I also knew that I couldn't afford it if I was really focused on paying off debt. I wanted to take my mom to Italy because she had never been to Europe. And so these were all of these things that I was like, this is what I'm going to do when I pay off my debt. You know, I'm living really hardcore life right now, side hustling all the time, you know, not living the life that I want, but doing this now for this specific period of time will allow me to live the life that I want later, and I'm never going to go back. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I did move back to LA. I adopted two beautiful cats, Miles and Thelonious, and I took my mom to Italy. And it's been great to be debt-free since and to be able to pursue other business projects without, you know, the threat of debt being in the background. And so having that debt-free dream list really helped me kind of battle the debt fatigue, because debt fatigue is real. And, you know, debt fatigue is when after paying, you know, tons of money for a long period of time, because for me, I was making, you know, four-figure payments for years, you know, and when you realize you're like, oh my God, I have to pay $1,000 or more for literally years, you know, that it just weighs on you. So, you know, I had debt fatigue and I was like, I'm so tired of paying off debt. Like, I just hate this. But, you know, I took a few breaks where I spent a little money on myself, or, you know, I focused on saving rather than debt. But for the most part, it was that debt-free dream list that really kind of kept me motivated and deal with those times where I was just like, ugh, I want to give up. This is so exhausting and boring and I hate it.
If you could go back in time, would you still get the master's degree, or would you change your course a bit?
You know, that is hard to say, because given everything that's happened since with the blog and my career, you know, I definitely think it's worth it. But if you would have asked me like the first 2 years after, I'd be like, no, I shouldn't have gone to grad school. I shouldn't have gotten that degree. No way. But, you know, it's like I did live in New York, which was on my bucket list, which was nice. I met, you know, my best friend who lives in New York still. And, you know, in a weird, crazy way, it's led to this blog and this book and this career. So, like, It's a difficult answer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's complicated, as all things are. But it's a story that show that it's taken you to a really cool place. I mean, you have a podcast, a mental health and wealth. You created this wonderful retreat for women called Lola. I mean, I think it's so great to share that because beautiful things have been born out of this very difficult time, and that can happen for other people as well.
Yes, it's so funny that you mentioned that. Like, I have a friend who was like, Melanie, you turned your pain into your passion. I was like, yeah, I did. And, you know, it really helped me survive. Because like I said, in 2012, I was super depressed and I was just getting sick of my own crap. So I was like, I need to do something different. And that's when I started the blog, just as a way to keep myself accountable and try to build a different life because I was miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are just such great stories to share. Well, I'm just curious, as we wrap up here, I want to leave, I know there are a lot of people listening, I should say, that are sitting in this time, in this moment, in this year. And I've heard from so many listeners who actually have had to turn to debt. They've had to use credit cards maybe more mm-hmm. than they would like to. A couple listeners said that they decided just to go back to school because they got laid off. They don't know what else to do. And they had to take out student loans. And all of that brings, I mean, there's so many unknowns that we're in right now. All of that brings up all of these different emotions, either extreme mental health or just general anxiety. So, like, what pearls of wisdom would you leave us with if someone who's sitting in that moment about, you know, their money and mental health, and maybe even just how to frame it to themselves so, you know, they can keep some level of sanity?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I would like to just kind of start with an example. You know, my blog, Dear Debt, was really about writing these breakup letters to debt. You know, like, Dear Debt, we're done. I never want to see you again. And so I wrote a lot of these letters, and then I also invited other people to write these letters. And a lot of my letters were like bitter and angry and like, I can't wait to, you know, dump you. And, you know, I actually had a few letters from people who were like, Dear Debt, thank you for allowing me to not be homeless. Thank you for keeping food on the table. And, you know, when I started getting those letters with this different positive reframe, I was like, wow, this is so powerful and so different than my experience. And so I just wanted to share that with people right now that, you know, if you're dealing with credit card debt because that's what you need to keep food on the table or pay your rent or pay your bills, like, it's an unfortunate situation. But if that's what helps you continue to live and eat, there's no shame in that. And, you know, I just think of those letters all of the time because those people were so happy to even have access to that credit to be able to do that. And, you know, they're like, Dear Debt, thanks for, you know, the food on the table and being able to provide childcare and to be able to provide, you know, money for rent and all of these kinds of things. And so, you know, just reframe it that way. If that's what you're turning to right now, just to survive, like, these are, you know, phrase of the century, unprecedented times. And, you know, we just don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going on. There's no level of certainty at all whatsoever. And this is something that we're navigating for the first time. And we don't have the answers. There's just no formula. And so we're all just relying on what we can to get by. And if that means debt or credit cards, don't internalize that shame. If you've gotten, you know, laid off, don't internalize that shame like so many people have. If your income has taken a hit, like, welcome to the club. Literally almost everybody I know has, you know, taken a hit in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's important that we try not to internalize this as a personal failure and just realize that, you know, the system is broken and there are a lot of things out of our control, and let's do the best that we can with the resources that we have. And, you know, if we do have more time right now, let's focus on building up those skills, maybe looking up different opportunities, you know, doing something that you've always wanted to do. And I think now is a beautiful time to try to figure out, you know, what makes me happy without money? Like, what do I really enjoy? And like I said, really cultivating that joy, beauty, and pleasure, you know, in these incredibly dark times. And, you know, on my podcast, The Mental Health and Wealth Show, I had a guest who was saying that joy is a superpower in these times. You know, if you can cultivate joy, that's like a superpower to deal with these insane times. And so I just want people to be able to reframe, you know, any debt or any layoffs or any income hits and not take it personally. And like I said, something that really grounds me when I'm, you know, worried about work and, oh my gosh, my income and this and that. And, you know, I just start spiraling. I just start breathing and try to get into the moment and say, I am healthy. I am safe. And you think of all the people who are dealing with coronavirus, people who have dealt with incredible racial injustice. I mean, just to be able to say, I'm healthy, I am safe. I mean, wow, we're doing a lot better than a lot of people. So I think we should take immense gratitude in that.
I am on a personal mission after talking with Melanie to actively search for more joy, beauty, and pleasure in each day. I go for about, I've been trying to do this since March, about a 5-mile walk almost every morning, and we always see little bunnies around in the morning. It's something just so simple, but it brings me so much joy and really helps me focus on what's good and not always what I need to do or what I need to pay that day. Who knew that bunnies could bring me such joy? So such a simple trick, but with, I think, mind-blowing results. If you wanted to connect with Melanie and reach out to her, you can find her lots of places at deardet.com, lolaretreat.com, mentalhealthandwealth.com, on the Mental Health and Wealth podcast, and also on her website, melanielocker.com.
Hey, you.
Yes, you.
Before you go, we want to say thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the links, tags, and ads you've heard on today's episode, check out the show notes or go to mmoneypodcast.com, where you'll find more episodes to share with your friends. While you're at it, leave us a review and make sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss out on all the money tips and tricks that will take you from a millennial regular to a millennial money expert. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.
Rakuten helps you be a smarter shopper and save money on just about everything. People all have things they need to buy, whether it's home essentials or a self-care treat just for you. With Rakuten, you get cash back on clothes, groceries, travel, and much, much more. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other deals, like store sales and credit card points. In case you're wondering, the stores on Rakuten are the ones you know and love, and lots of cool ones waiting to be discovered, including Target, Lowe's, and Nike. When it comes to savvy shopping and saving money, Rakuten is a no-brainer. It's free and easy to join. Just go to Rakuten.com now or download the Rakuten app today. That's Rakuten.